welcome to Radio Who, What, Why. I'm Jeff Scheckman.
Mostly as a result of the cacophony of news about the media itself, we know who the players are. The blonde ambition of Fox, the blaring at-war posture of Breitbart, talk radio and its collection of Hannity acolytes, the progressive voice of MSNBC, and the renewed investigative journalism of the Washington Post and the New York Times. However, the company you may not know is the one that, below the radar, may be the most insidious, most effective, and most in service of the current administration. Sinclair Broadcasting controls 173 local television stations and is looking to buy 43 more. If it does, it will have, to mix metaphors, its right-wing tentacles into three-quarters of the living rooms of America. Today we're going to focus on Sinclair with my guest, Lucia Graves. She's a U.S. columnist for The Guardian. She's previously been a staff correspondent for The National Journal and a staff reporter at The Huffington Post. And it is my pleasure to welcome Lucia Graves here to talk about her article in The Guardian. This is Sinclair, the most dangerous U.S. company you've never heard of. Lucia, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me today.
Great to have you here. First of all, tell us a little bit about the history of Sinclair. Where did this company come from? Where did it get started?
Well, it's headquartered just outside Baltimore, and it was founded under another name in 71, actually. But it wasn't until more recently that it became sort of a political point of interest. The founder was Julian Sinclair Smith, and he was sort of described as the patriarch of the Smith family, which now owns Sinclair. And he was more of a technical person. He started out in radio and then sort of gradually shifted to television. But his four sons who've taken over the business have taken it in a more explicitly political direction.
And it has been certainly of late a blatantly political direction, even more so in many ways than Fox and what we've seen there, in terms of its really insisting that its message get out through its local stations.
Yeah, well, I think one of the concerns that a lot of people have is the apparent relationship it has with Trump's FCC, the regulatory body for media in the U.S. Since Trump took office, the head of the FCC has made a number of moves that make it easier for Sinclair to expand its reach to 72% of American households, which is twice the number of households that used to previously be legal, but they've sort of relaxed regulations to make it possible for Sinclair to move forward with this big merger. And they haven't signed off. There's still an approval process that needs to take place, but people expect that the FCC is sort of working hand in hand with Sinclair. And I think that most people believe it'll be approved.
Mm-hmm. Talk a little bit about these 10-minute political commentaries that Sinclair has made their local stations run that you talk about in your article.
Well, so one of the reasons people don't know what Sinclair is because, unlike these sort of big national syndicates like Fox or ABC, Sinclair is partners with local news stations. So it will show up just as your local NBC affiliate or ABC affiliate, whatever the syndicate is. But there are sort of trademark elements of Sinclair stations, and one of them is what you mentioned, these sort of must-run 10-minute political commentary segments. In April, Sinclair hired Boris Epstein, who's a former campaign spokesman for Donald Trump and worked in the White House press office. So I think it's not surprising that a lot of these sort of 10-minute commentary segments sound a lot like Trump messaging from the White House, and that they're being sort of beamed into 72% of American households with the television. So the power of that is pretty disturbing, especially given the sort of war on media that Trump has waged since taking office. This will essentially allow him to not cooperate with the more traditional outlets like the New York Times and the Washington Post, because he can go around them. He's his former spokesman is has these 10-minute political segments that just get sort of beamed into people's televisions. So it really changes the incentives for him.
It's interesting that this also started during the campaign when the Sinclair stations did numerous interviews with Trump and zero interviews with Clinton.
Yeah, that was a cause for concern with a lot of people. And, you know, the Sinclair people will say, David Smith has said, the sort of main brother in charge, he was CEO for almost 30 years until sort of stepping down to sort of more senior advisory role. Just since Sinclair has been in the limelight these last couple months, he likes to keep a low profile.
To what extent do you think that Sinclair is going to be able to continue to keep this low profile? There seems to be more attention focused on it lately. And you mentioned in your Guardian story that there's suddenly some interest in Congress in what Sinclair has been doing and the lax FCC regulatory aspect of it.
Well, you know, this is the kind of reach that Sinclair is going to have and sort of the blatant way that it's embraced Trump's messaging, both through television and their recent online acquisition of the news site Circa, means that it is going to be a lot more in the spotlight. During the campaign, when, as you mentioned, it gave 15 interviews to Donald Trump and zero to Hillary Clinton and things like that, it was sort of outshone, I would say, by Fox News and people. You know, Fox News is branded as a conservative outlet. People know what that is. And so, and Murdoch, the chairman of Fox News, has sort of been in the limelight for decades. So I think there was a lot more interest at the time around Fox. But given, I think, Trump's sort of increasing favoritism towards Sinclair and this huge $3.9 billion merger, that's going to be changing very rapidly.
You mentioned Circa a few moments ago, this website that Sinclair is in the process of purchasing, or I guess has purchased. Talk a little bit about what that is and what you think they hope to do with it.
Well, Circa is one of the sort of relatively recent additions to their portfolio, and it started out as a mobile news app. It was sort of out of Silicon Valley, had nothing to do with Sinclair or the Smith brothers who own Sinclair, but they acquired it. Ostensibly, you know, because for the innovative things it was doing with mobile applications, but it's really just being used as a very sort of traditional news site online, with these sort of short articles. They don't even necessarily have a byline, an author byline on them. So it'll just say, you know, by Circa staff. And some of the stories read kind of like a aggregated BuzzFeed article, you know, just not very much content, kind of pulling from the internet. And some of them have sort of a pro-Trump bent. So I think the perception is that this is going to be sort of the new Breitbart for him, sort of a favored website that he can leak things to that he doesn't want to give to the Times or the Post or more sort of outlets with real trained reporters. Another thing that happened was, with the Tribune merger, ahead of the Tribune merger, Tribune sort of got rid of some of its properties that it had been building with sort of investigative journalists and feature writers. They had just, I think in August, started staffing up for a new sort of investigative website at Tribune. And as soon as it became apparent, before it was announced, but as soon as it became apparent that Tribune was going to be acquired by Sinclair, they started firing those journalists or sort of like laying off everyone who was associated with that new sort of investigative hard-hitting team. And I think in favor of things like Circa, which is the model that Sinclair likes.
Given how big Sinclair is, how many people work there, how many employees they have that have come from a diverse background, what does your reporting tell you in terms of any potential pushback within Sinclair, within the organization, among employees to its hard right agenda?
Well, this is something that's been apparent going on for some time. I mean, I think that even, you know, 15 years ago, people graduating from journalism school would be told, you know, don't go to work for Sinclair. They pay people terribly. They get rid of veteran reporters. It was just sort of seen as like a cheap, unkind employer and sort of not a place to go if you wanted to have real experience. And since then, The political agenda has become part of that concern. There were some good reports in the New York Times and the Washington Post on sort of what has happened with Sinclair taking over local affiliate stations in Washington, D.C., and also in Washington State. And the sort of concerns that veteran reporters had there at the initial transfer of power, and then also how quickly they shed all of their talent, both because, more senior experienced reporters are expensive or more expensive than people just out of college, but also because I think there's a perception that, you know, they might have a better understanding of what constitutes real journalism and make trouble for Sinclair when they try to push these sort of 10-minute segments and that kind of thing.
One of the other rules that Sinclair is trying to get eliminated, which is something that the FCC has had as a rule for a long time, is this requirement that local news stations actually have a local studio in the community that they broadcast from. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, so in addition to paving the way for Sinclair's merger, the FCC is proposing that one of its most fundamental rules that requires you having an actual physical studio where you're doing the broadcasting in order to be considered a local news studio and treated with what are frankly federal protections for local news, that be eliminated, which will make it possible for Sinclair to do a lot more sort of nationally pushed segments from its headquarters. And, you know, one of the reasons you don't hear the name Sinclair is because it's supposed to be something that's produced. It's supposed to be the news you're watching is produced by a local studio, by local journalists who are embedded in the community and who you have sort of come to know. But under the new federal guidelines that they are changing, that may very well no longer be the case. And also, it may not even be apparent that that's changing because Sinclair doesn't say anywhere on the station that it's, you know, Sinclair. You just may see the faces of your local newscasters change, and you may see more of these segments, but viewers won't actually know that this is happening necessarily.
Tell us a little bit about what went on with the Sinclair station in Montana during the recent special election, during the recent special congressional election up there, where there was this last-minute kerfuffle, this fight between a reporter and one of the candidates.
Oh, I'm glad you asked about that. That's an interesting case. So this was my colleague, Guardian reporter Ben Jacobs, who works in the D.C. office with me, covering U.S. congressional candidate Greg Gianforte's election in Montana. He was asking Ben, my colleague, was asking him a question about the GOP healthcare bill, and the candidate got agitated and assaulted him, threw him on the ground, and Ben has had a recording of all of this that was being aired nationally, you know, on the Today Show, and it was hands down the biggest political story in the state that night. However, the local NBC affiliate, which had recently been bought by Sinclair, refused to air Jacobs' audio recording of the incident in which he is assaulted. And it's clear from the recording sort of what's happening. He sort of narrates it as it's occurring. You know, it's an NBC affiliate station, even though it's owned by Sinclair, and NBC executives in New York were pretty irate to not have the biggest political story of the day, and at a very sensitive time coming right before the election. And I actually was able to read the email exchange between the local producer in Montana and NBC executives in New York, and the news director there said things like, oh, well, the Guardian is a liberal outlet. It can't be trusted. I mean, never mind that NBC is also sort of branded as a liberal outlet. And this is one of the differences between major national outlets and Sinclair, which purports to have no political outlook whatsoever, even though to look at the organization and the donations of the people who run it, that's clearly not true. So anyways, they refused to run the audio, and Rep. Gianforte, who's now in Congress, went on to win the election the following day. And another sort of interesting detail here is I called the local news producer who made this decision and asked her if it was influenced by Sinclair executives. And they've denied that it was influenced by Sinclair. And they also note that, you know, the transition, that they were in transition having been bought by Sinclair, but that it wasn't finalized at that point, and made a lot of denials sort of to that effect. But the day after, there was a police report filed on my colleague's assault, Fred Smith, the vice president of Sinclair, donated $1,000 to Greg Gianforte. This is, you know, he's at this point making national headlines all over the country for having assaulted a reporter. So that for a news executive to donate to a candidate after that is, I think, sends a very clear message that is, frankly, hostile to journalism.
Is Sinclair concerned that there will be eventually or might be pushback from its various suppliers, from the NBCs of the world and the CBSs of the world, the companies that supply the content for these local stations?
Yeah, you know, that's a great question. And it's a business question, too, obviously, as well as a political question and sort of a journalistic integrity question. So far, the main source of that kind of pushback that I'm aware of is Rupert Murdoch saying that he may pull his Fox affiliate stations from Sinclair and go with a lesser known company with less influence. But I think that's seen as sort of that threat, and he hasn't moved forward with that at this point. I think is because Sinclair is seen as being a threat potentially to Murdoch's conservative news empire. So it would be more of a business consideration, I think, than anything about journalistic integrity that is at this point moving people.
And have any of the other companies, NBC or any of the others, really talked about pushing back on this and pulling their programming, their entertainment programming from Sinclair stations?
At this point, I have not heard anything to that effect. No. You know, NBC did push back around this particular incident in Montana, sort of asking why it wasn't being covered. And I know there are other examples of sort of case by case things like that. But that would be a major sort of financial decision with a lot of sort of business implications for the company. So at a time when Sinclair is, you know, immensely powerful and positioned to become more powerful still, and with that sort of expanded reach comes more clout, I think it's going to be harder than ever for people to say no to Sinclair.
Lucia Graves, her article in The Guardian is "This is Sinclair, the most dangerous U.S. company you've never heard of." Lucia, I thank you so much for spending time with us here on Radio Who, What, Why.
Thank you so much for having me today.
Thank you. Thank you for listening and joining us here on Radio Who, What, Why. I hope you join us next week for another Radio Who, What, Why podcast. I'm Jeff Shekman. If you like this podcast, please feel free to share and help others find it by rating and reviewing it on iTunes. You can also support this podcast and all the work we do by going to whowhatwhy.org/donate.